I have it on the desk beside me as I write. The first edition of Junkie by William S. Burroughs. The world has changed a great deal in the 50-odd years since it was originally published, and some of those changes are evident in the differences between the first edition of this memorable work and the one you are currently holding in your hands. Entitled Junkie, Confessions of an Unredeemed Drug Addict, and authored pseudonymously by William Lee, Burroughs' mother's maiden name, he didn't look too far for a nom de plume. The Ace original retailed for 35 cents, and as a double book was bound back-to-back with Narcotic Agent by Maurice Helbrant. The two books in one format was not uncommon in the 1950s America, but besides the obvious similarity in subject matter, A.A. Wine, Burroughs' publisher, felt that he had to balance such an unapologetic account of drug addiction with an abridgment of these memoirs of a Federal Bureau of Narcotics agent, which originally appeared in 1941. Since in the historical anti-drug culture of post-war America, potential censor could easily induce self-censorship. It's remarkable that Junkie found a publisher at all. Besides its subtitle. Wine did think the book had a redemptive capability, as the protagonist made efforts to free himself of his addiction. But he also insisted that Burroughs preface the work with an autobiographical sketch that would explain to the reader how it was that someone such as himself, a Harvard graduate from the social register family, came to be a drug addict. The same cautious instinct led Wynn to interpolate bracketed disclaimers after most of Burroughs, often factually correct, but radically unorthodox and sometimes outright wacky statements about the nature of intoxication and chemical dependency. Thus, when Burroughs stated, perhaps if a junkie could keep himself in a constant state of kicking, he would live to a phenomenal age, the bracket read, ED note. This is contradicted by recognizing medical authority. Burroughs' preface, now restyled as a prologue, still stands first in the current edition, but relegated to the rear of the text is the glossary of junk lingo and jive, talk with which he sought to initiate his square readership into the hip world. And for Burroughs, the term hip referred resolutely to the heroin subculture. The bracketed editorial note have been exercised. Both Junkie and Narcotic Agent had covers of beautiful garnishes, featuring 1950s damsels in distress. The blonde lovely on the cover of Helbrant's book is being handcuffed, presumably by the eponymous agent, although his face and figure are hidden in the shadows. While clad only in her slip, the presence of an ashtray, hypodermic, and spoon on the table in front of her goes a long way in explaining her expression of serene indifference. However, on the cover of Junkie, we are given a more actively dramatic portrayal. A craggy-browed man is grabbing a blonde lovely from behind. One of his arms is around her neck, while the other grasps her hand, within which is a paper package. The table beside them has been knocked in the fray, propelling a spoon, a hypodermic, and even a gas ring into inner space. The cover illustration is, in fact, just that, an illustration of a scene described by Burroughs in the book. When my wife saw I was getting the habit again, she did something she had never done before. I was cooking up a shot 2 days after I'd connected with old Ike. My wife grabbed a spoon and threw the junk on the floor. I slapped her twice across her face, and she threw herself on the bed sobbing. That this was uncredited, and now forgotten hack artist, should have chosen one of the small handful of episodes featuring the protagonist's wife to use for the cover illustration, represents one of those nastily serendipitous ironies that Burroughs himself almost always chose to view as evidence of the magical universe. From double book to standalone, from Ace original to Penguin modern classic, from unredeemed confession to cult novel, From a cheap shocker to a refined taste. The history of this text, in a strange way, acts as an allegory of the way the heroin subculture borrows, depicted, has mutated, spread, and even grafted itself with the corpus of the wider society. In the process, irrevocably altering that upon which it parasites. Just as, if you turn to his glossary, you will see how many arcane drug terms have metacized into the vigorous language. Burroughs observed a discrete, if international, urban phenomenon confined to the physical as well as to the psychic margins of society. Junk is often found adjacent to ambiguous or transitional districts. East 14th near 3rd in New York, Poydras and St. Charles in New Orleans, San Gian Litron in Mexico City, stores selling artificial limbs, wig makers, dental mechanics, loft manufacturers of perfumes, pomades, novelties, essential oils. A point where dubious business enterprises reaches Skid Row. Today, junk is everywhere, on housing estates and in penthouses, sniffed, smoked, and shot up by models and model makers alike. Heroin chic has been and gone as a stylistic affection, and will doubtless return again. Countless books and films have been predicted on the use and abuse of the drug. The heroin addict has become a stock figure in soap operas. Conservative estimates of the number of heroin addicts in Britain indicate a thousandfold increase in the past half century. Burroughs wrote Junkie on the very cusp of transformation in Western culture. His junkies were creatures of depression, many of whose addicts predated even the Harrison Act of 1922. Which outlawed the legal sale of heroin and cocaine in the USA. In Junkie, the protagonist speaks scathingly of the new generation. The young hipsters seem lacking in energy, spontaneous enjoyment of life. The mention of pot or junk will galvanize them like a shot of coke. They jump around and say, "Too much, man! Let's pick up! Let's get loaded!" But after a shot, they slump into a chair like a resigned baby waiting for life to bring the bottle again. It is too much to hypothesize that as it was to the demimonde, so has it been for the wider world. That is, addicts have increased to numbers and become more tightly integrated into society. So has the addictive character of the collective consciousness become more horribly evident. The mass obsessions with polymorphous sexuality and the awesome death of effect implied by the worship of celebrity are matched by a compulsive consumerism characterized by the built-in obsolescence not only of products but also of the lifestyles and mindsets within which they are placed. Certainly Burroughs himself viewed the post-war era as a Gotterdammt Barung and a convulsive re-evaluation of all values. But his anomic inclinations and his Mandarin intellect, Burroughs was in a paradoxical position vis-a-vis. The coming cultural revolution of the 1960s, an open homosexual and drug addict, his quintessentially Midwestern libertarianism, helped him to eschew any command economy of ethics, while his personal inclinations meant he had to travel with distastefully socialist and liberal fellows. For Burroughs, the re-evaluation was both discount and markup, and perhaps it was this that made him such a great avatar of the emergent counterculture. Janice faced and like some terminally ill, cadaverous butler, Burrows ushers in the new society of kicks, for insight as well as for kick's sake. In the final paragraph of Junkie, he writes, "Kick is seeing things from a special angle. Kick is momentary freedom from the claims of the aging, cautious, nagging, frightened flesh." He might have added that kicking is what you do to God's ribs once he's down on the ground and begging for mercy. By all of which, you can take it as stated that in a book, important sense, that in a very important sense, I view Burroughs Junkie not to be a book about heroin addiction at all, any more than I perceive Camus's The Fall, 1956, to be about the legal profession, or Sartre's Nausea, 1938, to be concerned with the problems of historical research. Oh my god, quick interruption. I love Nausea. That's the best book ever. Okay, let's keep going. All three are works in which an alienated protagonist grapples with a world perceived as irrevocably external and irredeemably meaningless. All three are trajected at the reader in the forms of insistent monologues. As Burroughs writes in The Hoodlums, Jack in Junkie, he had a knack of throwing his voice, directly into your consciousness. No external noise drowned him out. The same could be said of William Lee himself, or Clements, or Roquitin. But before grappling with the existential load of Junkie, let's return to that cover illustration with its portrayal of William Lee as Rock Hudson and his common-law wife, John Vollmer, as Kim Novak. When I say Burroughs himself must have regarded the illustration, if he thought of it at all as evidence of the magical universe he conceived of as underpinning and interpreting our own, it is because the first draft of the book was completed in the months immediately preceding his killing of Vollmer on 6 September 1951 in Mexico City. Burroughs himself wrote in his 1985 foreword to Queer, which was completed in the year after Vollmer's death, but remained unpublished until 34 years later. "I am forced to the appalling conclusion that I would never have become a writer but for Joan's death, and to a realization of the extent to which this event had motivated and formulated my writing."